the children are going to disagree with you. And at some point, the children aren't even going to listen to you, you know? And at some point, we know that children get to this point of curiosity. And Siddhartha is like, what's beyond those walls? There has to be something. This can't be the world. Like, what's beyond these walls? And we know that even ourselves, it's like, you know, some of us, like myself, went traveling. I wanted to see what was beyond the world that I grew up in, a village, you know, what was beyond that. And I wanted to go and travel and see the world. And so Siddhartha gets his point, what's beyond these walls? And he really wants to go beyond the walls. And he begs his father, I really want to go beyond the walls. So in the end, this good father is realizes, well, may as well let him go. Otherwise, he's going to do it himself and I'm going to lose him. So what the father does is make sure that the whole beyond the walls, everything is gentrified. You know, move all the unhoused people away so that his son doesn't see the unhoused people. You know, moves all the sick people away and really gentrifies it. And so Siddhartha goes out. He goes out into the world in a chariot. He's got the horseman there, so it's just him and the person who's got the reins of the horse, and they're galloping through the town. Siddhartha's looking around and taking it all in, and at some point he goes, what's that? He has such a shock. Like, what's that? And the horseman says to him, that's an old person. Old? What do you mean, old? That's an old person. I'm going to become like that. I'm going to get old and go grey and shrivel up and hunch over. Yes. And Siddhartha is disturbed. It's disturbed. Yeah. And I've just noticed the message in there, and I'll come to that when we have Q&A. So just to acknowledge that. And so he was disturbed. Anyway, they go back, you know, and Siddhartha wants to go out again. Father only says you can go out once, but, you know, he begs the horseman, take me out again. So he goes out again, and they go into the town, they go a bit further, and again it's like, what's that? And the horseman says, that's a sick person. That person is sick. Sick? What do you mean, sick? This person is coughing and they're vomiting and they're like, what do you mean? And it's that, am I going to get sick? And yes, sir, you will get sick. And it's completely disturbed. And we know there's a high correlation of adults who work in the medical profession because they grew up with an unwell parent. Yeah. So disturbed. They wanted to change the world. Very high correlation. So this is, you know, whether we believe this actually happened or not, this is real. We know this. Yeah. And he goes out again. And there's this procession. So Siddhartha's like, really like all these people. They're singing. He knows processions. They have processions within the walls. Sees a procession. But as he gets closer, he sees that there are these people holding something. And he sees. And it's like, what's that? He's never seen this sight before. What's that? And the horseman says to him, that's a dead person. Dead? What do you mean dead? Can't the person move? Breathe? That's a dead person. I'm going to be dead? That's going to happen to me? The shock. How many of us are in touch with the fact that actually at some point we are going to be dead.
Yeah.
And so he has this existential crisis. It's like, how do we deal with this? And we know out there in the world, there are people who are, you know, doing Botox and doing all this stuff so that they can look young, you know?
Yeah.
We know that there are many people who can't cope with the grey hair and will dye the grey hair. You know, some of us, you know, it's like hearing aids when we actually accept that we're going to have hearing aids.
Yeah.
And it can take a long while for us to accept that actually we do need hearing aids as part of aging.
Yeah.
And so this existential crisis. And Stauffer, it's like there has to be some answer to this. There has to be some explanation to this. There has to be. And so we know that he goes out again one more time. And he goes out. And he sees this person wandering, who is just radiating bliss and joy. This person seems so peaceful and happy. The person is wandering around the town and the village, and there are old people now, so he's got used to it. There were some sick people, there were some dead people, and this person just seems to be happy. How can this person be happy? This is like, he says to the horseman, what is this? Who is this? How can this person be walking around Samsara, this place, and be happy? And the horseman says to him, that's a mendicant. That's a mendicant. Somebody who's just gone forth from all these worldly things. And Siddhartha thinks, maybe that person has the answer. That person has the answer. And that's the thing that really pivots Siddhartha to go forth, to go forth from the worldly, from the God realm.
Yeah,
from the God realm. And I want to talk, you know, to Tibetan wheel of life. There's the God realm, you know. And I say that actually a lot of us are living in that God realm, you know. And at some point, the God realm runs out and you fall out. And some of you may be here, be living in the hell realm.
Yeah.
That hell realm. Yeah. Or the hungry ghost realm. Or the animal realm. Or the realm of titans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at some point, for us to really get to understand these Dharma objects, because they are called Dharma objects, if we think of the Anapanasati or the Satipatthana, that fourth tetrad in the Anapanasati is a reflection on these Dharma objects. It's a reflection on aging.
Yeah.
And I just really want you to take a moment to reflect on aging, because we're all aging. No matter how old you are, we are all aging. And aging can be a beautiful thing. It really can be a beautiful thing. You know, every time I go to my ophthalmologist, as I have to go every year, and he always says to me, you never look a year older. And I could collude with that. And I say to him, yeah, but my eyes are getting older. My eyes are getting older, not to collude with the fact that, yes, I am aging. Yeah. You know, and I could fool myself, because I obviously have the genes where I just don't have grey hair. At the moment, I'm 63 now. Just turned 63 and I don't have grey hair. Or there may be one or two somewhere lurking around, and I can fool myself. But no, I am aging. And it is beautiful. I ever think, oh my God, if I was stuck in my 20s or my teens, oh my God, that was such a hell realm for me. Such a hell realm. And I know that aging can bring on physical disabilities.
Yeah.
We can't even, you know, have to accept this. Certain things. I had a really bad concussion, and I have to accept that actually that concussion, sometimes I can have symptoms have an impact. But that's okay. That's part of life, part of living.
Yeah.
And sickness. You know, my partner yesterday was in the car and rang up a friend that she hadn't heard from. And the friend was on speaker and just said, yep, well, cancer's come back. Just been diagnosed with four lymphomas. Can't do anything. But you know what? I'm just going to live the rest of my life. It's okay. It really is okay. You know, I've had a good life and it really is okay. And that was a teaching for me with this sickness. I have another friend who's got cancer. And it's like the attitude has been so positive. And yes, it's so much easier when we get these things when we're older. Because, you know, when we're younger, you know, I always remember that show, 6 Foot Under. And every episode, somebody would die. And there was this one situation where a woman comes in and she's completely distraught because her 90-year-old father has died. And in that next moment, somebody has come in and a young baby has died. Yeah. And they don't make any comment. And you just see for yourself that actually sickness, aging and death is part of life. There is that joke which says, why did the medical assistant get fired? Why did the medical assistant get fired? Because they kept on writing on the record the cause of death, birth.
Yeah.
The cause of sickness is birth. The cause of aging is birth. And how do we come into relationship with these messages? How do we? You know? And some of you might say, oh, yeah, it's okay. I can deal with the death bit. Yeah, the fine. And we can begin to think that, forget that actually there is the sickness and the disability that can go like the dementia. You know, for me, I've been caring for a friend of mine who got early dementia in her early 60s. And she's now 68, so we've been caring. And there are times when I go into horrified anxiety. You know, every time I can't remember something, is that it? Whatever is that? And then I just relax. Just this is part of aging. We just don't know what's going to happen. I can't beat that. So how can we come into relationship with these messengers, these sights? Yeah, more peacefully.
Yeah,
how can we? You know, it was so beautiful. My father-in-law has just died. It's Catholic, full-on Catholic, you know, ceremony. Never been to one of those before. So the first day, open casket. Casket must have cost thousands. Never seen one like that. But what was so beautiful was that my sister-in-law brought her grandchildren, 6 and 8. So that they could be with this dead body in this casket. It's just so beautiful. I work as a therapist and I have clients who are still suffering in their 60s and 70s because a parent died when they were 5 or 6 and they never saw the parent. Nothing was ever said. In fact, when the funeral happened, they were sent to school.
Yeah.
Hidden away. Hidden away. So how can we begin to talk about this? How many of you have a will here? That is one way of coming into relationship with this. Yeah. Because I'm telling you, a will takes care of business once you've gone. You don't have a will. You make it really hard for people who are left. Making a will, and I do have a will. You know, the practice is now having to update it. One of the things, you know, I'm really looking at, and it, you know, in a joyful way, it's like, I've got so much stuff in my house. Not, you know, it's clothes. And I know I've got so much stuff because I look for something and I can't find it. That means I've got too much stuff in my closet. You know, and I say to my friend, my partner has a man cave. It's like, there's all this stuff in there. And I say, please don't die before me because I don't want to have to clear out the stuff. Who's going to clear it out? I had a friend who died a few months ago. She had so much stuff, and you know what? Half of it had to go into a skip. What are we going to do with this stuff? Yeah. Yeah. This stuff. These attachments. And again, having this conversation, it can be a joyful conversation. Yeah. How do we want to live the rest of our life? Yeah. How do we want to live the rest of our life? Because we don't know if we've got tomorrow, okay? We don't know if we've got next year, yeah? All we have is this moment right now, yeah? And so some of the ways I really, when I think of these sites and these messages, is when I'm in relationship with somebody, I don't want it to be the last time that I hear that they've passed and the last time I was in relationship with them was in conflict. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Thich Nhat Hanh often would say, the late Thich Nhat Hanh, whenever we meet somebody, greet them as if it's the first time we're ever seeing them. Yeah. And when they leave, say goodbye as if it's the last time we're going to see them. Has this practice. I love you, and one day you and I will die. And I practice that with some of my friends because I don't know. I can remember being in India a few years ago and laughing with my friends, saying, when I come, I'm going to stay in your house because they were brilliant cooks and blah, 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 and whatever, and there was a few of us laughing. We're going to stay in your house next time we come to India. 6 months later, they were both dead. Went to visit their friends, their children in the US, got back to Mumbai, and were killed outright in a car crash. We don't know. I don't know if I've got tomorrow. I don't know if I have a stroke tomorrow. I just don't know. So how do we want to live the rest of our life? Who can be that fourth sight? And I do have fourth sights that, definitely, it was a fourth sight that put me onto the path. My friend Amrigita in my 20s. I wanted something she had. Yeah. And so in a way, perhaps we can come back to this fourth sight. Who can inspire us? Who can teach us to live our life in a more meaningful way? Yeah. Who can that be? And, you know, I want to include ancestors. Could be an ancestor, and not necessarily biological ancestors, because some of those biological ancestors we need to quarantine, you know, not ready to be with them, need to quarantine some of those biological ancestors. But there are affinity ancestors, people in history who have really inspired us. Yeah. You can, how would you choose to live this life? How would you? Yeah. How would you? Okay. I am going to end, and then we'll have a few questions. I'm going to end with the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra teaches me how to live. And I'm going to do it in the words of Dolly Parton. So all of you know who Dolly Parton is. So the Heart Sutra in the words of Dolly Parton. Well now, I've been walking this path of understanding. And the truth ain't always fancy, honey. It's just plain and free. So listen up, sweetheart, with your heart all heavy laden, and I'll tell you about the wisdom that set even this old gal free. Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva of pure compassion, was moving through the deep stuff, the wisdom beyond compare, looked right through the five bundles we're all clinging to so tightly, and saw they were just empty. Nothing real was ever there. Now, here's the gospel, sugar. It's in its simplest, plainest talk. Form ain't a thing, but emptiness. And emptiness is form. Feelings, thoughts and choices, the whole dance we call our walking, they're just the same, empty dresses in a never-ending storm. All things bear the mark of emptiness, not born and not ceasing, not dirty and not spotless, not growing and not gone. So, darling, in emptiness, there is no eye to see sorrow, no ear to hear the bad news, no nose to smell what's wrong, no tongue for tasting bitter, no body feeling a thorn, no mind to get all tangled in the worries you have borne, no ignorance to cloud you, and no end to ignorance either, no old age death, sugar, and no end to that old song, no suffering, no cause of it, no stopping, and no pathway, no knowing and no getting, just a peace that you belong. Now a Buddha, leaning on this wisdom, finds a heart with no fences, no walls to hem him in, so there ain't no fear at all. He's turned loose from wrong imagining and every last confusion and settles in a nirvana that's a comfort standing tall. So every Buddha, past, present, and the ones the future's holding, they all rest on this pranya paramita. Don't you see? It's the great and mighty mantra, the lamp that lights the darkness, the supreme, the unbeatable, the truth that sets you free. It clears away all suffering. Now that ain't no empty promise. So here's the mantra, honey, plain and true. Just let it ring. Gone, 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 on over. Gone, 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 on over. Gone all the way on over. Awakening, hallelujah. And that, my dear, is the heart of the whole thing. Okay. Thank you for being here. This is an opportunity. Thank you for the hearts. It's an opportunity to ask some questions. Something came in here that I saw. Somebody... Oh, it was privately messaged to me. Okay. Had a hard time with the meditation due to betrayal from friends and being lonely. Yeah. So, again, as I was saying with the practice, it's those aren't the people you put in the practice. Yeah. Again, we need to be kind to ourselves. If you've had people who've betrayed you, you don't put them in the practice. And if you know, you just think that I can't do the practice because of betrayal of friends, then all you do is do the first stage and you just give loving kindness to yourself. Loving kindness to yourself. Yeah. And that's what you do. And that's the practice until you're able to begin to actually open up to perhaps a friend who hasn't betrayed you. Yeah. And to, you know, to let go, because there is... that your experience of betrayal, and that's really hard, and that story. And in a way, one of the things you can begin doing once you practice on yourself is, who would you be without the story of betrayal? Who would we be? What would that look like? So I'm really sorry that you had a hard time with the meditation. It means that it was working, yeah? And just be kind to yourself and well done. And thank you for reaching out and sharing that. So just radiating some loving kindness and some love towards you. Okay. Any questions? I'm just scrolling through to see if anything... Don't know, Jorge, if you could see if anything came up in the chat. But this is a opportunity to ask some questions. Is that you, Cammy, with your hand up? Great.
That's me, yes. Okay. Not so much a question. You've touched on so much that I'm going through. I'm 85, and almost every month something new crops up. And through your first meditation, I just cried. But then you made me laugh. I loved it when you chanted. You did that sort of chant singing bit. And I just started smiling. And I thought, oh, my God, I've been trying to get hold of you for ages. I live in Vancouver. I want to do something. If you ever hold meditations here, I just feel so connected to you without having met you. And then I just wept because I just had a terrible day yesterday in the rain on Bowen Island, thinking I was going to a party that didn't happen. And I came home exhausted. And then when I found out you were on this morning, I thought, I've got to listen. So it's not a question so much, but I want to know if I can contact you and do...
Sure, Cammy, what are you doing on New Year's Eve? I'm actually going to be at the Vancouver Buddhist Center on New Year's Eve.
I'm living in Cole Harbour, and I think I was planning to be here. But if I can get information, how can I get information?
I will put, actually, Jorge, can you kind of just Google Vancouver, Tri Ratna Vancouver Buddhist Center, and put the website in the chat? And then all the information is there. But we are doing, and it's dropping. You don't have to stay all evening. I think it starts from 7. And it is, I think we are doing hybrid as well. But yeah, if you're able to.
I have a bit of a mobility disability at the moment with my legs and feet and don't go out much at night. So I don't drive.
Join us online. Join us online.
Because we will be online as well.
Yeah, it will be online as well. And you can contact me through my website.
Okay. And that will be put up or do I do it through the Tri Ratna?
I think Jorge I'll put my website here and you can contact me through my website.
Great. I've really been trying to connect with you for a long time. I'm from London originally and did the Overland Trail to India and all that. And I studied with Christopher Titmus for ages, did some of his training. So I don't want to take any more time, darling.
Oh, that's fine. Lovely. Thank you. Just thank you. And thank you for just saying that, you know, age 85 and every month, something different.
We're not separate. So much. We're not making separate. The will. I'm trying to make a will and it's complex too.
Yeah, it is. Thank you.
I loved every minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Cammy. Okay. Charles, I think you've got your hand up. And just as you're putting the microphone on, I just, you know, when I went to visit, or when I go to visit my in-laws in their assisted living, and, you know, you go into those assisted living places when you can walk in and you're still well, and, you know, kind of when you need more help, you pay for more. I can remember just sitting there and thinking, I'm not separate from this. And this is what we have to remember. We're not separate. We're not separate from Cammy. We're not separate, you know. And I have to remind myself, you know, being 63, I'm closer to the age of Cammy than I'm closer to people in their 20s. And I can forget that. We can forget that. Yeah. Okay. Charles.
Hi. Thank you so much for this wonderful set. It really is inspiring. I've had a difficulty over the years because I'm at that age where I've lost friends. About 10 years ago, my brother said was diagnosed with a terminal illness. Thank goodness it was a misdiagnosis, and he's still around. He's 4 years older than I. But it really brought to my mind with my friends who have serious illnesses, pancreatic cancer, passed away, et cetera, et cetera. It made me realize, because I've always, you sort of assume people are going to be around and your older brother's always going to be around, this, that, and the other, that it is not who predeceases whom, but the quality of your relationship now, today. And that really has inspired me to say what I feel to people, mostly the good things. I sort of reserve the bad things. And that's been very helpful to be in the moment with that consideration of, boy, we're getting on and so-and-so is going to die and I'm going to be without him, or maybe I'll be the one to die and they will be without me, et cetera. But that sort of helps me in that consideration. But I have one question about something that you said, which I just can't figure it out. And that is that, am I correct that Buddha said that life involves suffering? I'm correct about that, right?
No, you. Thank you for asking. Thank you for asking that, because I think sometimes we misinterpret that first noble truth. That actually, I mean, that first noble truth that there is suffering, but it's not like life is suffering. There is suffering because we will age and we're sick and we get dying because we're attached. But it doesn't. It's not like saying life is going to be suffering.
No, I didn't mean to say life is suffering. Life involves suffering.
Okay.
Okay, so Buddha said that. Yet you said today, which sort of I couldn't reason,
Sure.
is that when you attain enlightenment or nirvana, that eliminates the suffering. So my thing that I found inconsistent is, how can I be alive and living a life that involves suffering and attain an awakened state or nirvana that gets rid of suffering? They're inconsistent.
Did I don't think I said that when you attain enlightenment or nirvana that you're free of suffering. Yeah.
When I misunderstood,
Yeah. 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 In
how do you
fact,
explain it then?
okay, we'll explain it. In fact, I don't even think I think actually what I was just trying to think what I might have said would be interesting. But anyway, who knows? It's possible I could have said it. I don't, and if I did say it, then that is incorrect, because we have to remember that when it's said that actually when the prince woke up, he said that these identities that define me as a Buddha, as a Buddha, as a god, as a deva, as a human, have been destroyed, as a human, have been destroyed by me. So in a way, what happens is that we destroy those identities, but it doesn't mean to say that there is no suffering. I mean, it's the Buddha, it said, had backache and really worked with backache. And it's also said that Mara still came. Mara still came to tempt the Buddha. Yeah. So in a way, it's that whole, I didn't go, I mean, I love that's a story that I love telling. But what we know is that actually, I think what that allegory tells us, in the moment when the Buddha, again, well, let me just say this, that often people are searching for enlightenment, and what's so important is that when the Buddha vowed. When the prince, he would have been a prince. When the prince vowed not to move from this spot, the prince didn't say, I won't move from this spot until I find enlightenment. The prince vowed not to move from that spot until I find an end of suffering, which, in a way, because so often we're spiritually bypassing, we're looking for enlightenment, we're spiritually bypassing, but to find an end of suffering, we have to face the suffering. So again, to find in it, we have to face aging. Yeah. How do we face aging? How do we face sickness? How do we face this thing of dying and death? So definitely, I always say, with my partner, when we first met, I was used to say, what's the point of creating drama in the relationship? Because there will always be external things that will happen. We can't avoid that, but how do we face it? And how can we be with the suffering with an equanimous mind? because that's what it is. How can we begin to really see the emptiness in some of this suffering? How can we, and in a way, how can we begin to see the story in the suffering? And of course, it's really hard, you know, when we think that, you know, I mean, I don't think in my lifetime that I've ever been living where there hasn't been a war around in the world. But, you know, how do people, you know, live with that? How do people live equanimously, you know, in a war zone or in genocide zone or whatever? So I don't know whether that answers your question, but totally, you can be enlightened and have suffering. Totally.
Yeah. Okay, you know, just very quickly, I think Leslie brought up a great point, which takes it to the next level. It's sort of similar to the question I asked, and that is, Buddha also said everything is impermanent. Well, if you are enlightened and you have an awakened mind, then allegedly that will be impermanent as well and disappear, and you're back to suffering.
Yeah, well, everything changes. And in a way, what, rather than, because you really spoke in binary terms, and remember that the teachings are non-dual. So, you know, to kind of think, well, enlightenment, suffering or whatever is really, in a way, it's all interconnected. So really, I think sometimes when we get into this dualistic thinking, then it kind of flips us around. And yeah, everything changes. The breath, everything changes. Yeah, in this moment, everything changes. Yeah. You're smiling.
No, I think it's great. I love these discussions. I'm not going to belabor anything. I could have this discussion. I would love to discuss it for longer, but I won't. But I just think it's great. And it just makes me realize that life and everything else is a process. And it made me think that the important thing in Buddhism, as I understand, I'm relatively new to it, is you just got to keep doing it and keep practicing it. And things will change, but it keeps you on track. So there you go.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. And thank you, Leanne, for reminding us that pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. And I just really want to remember that we're not just talking about physical pain, there's mental pain as well. I think sometimes that it's sidestepped. And I think we have to remember that actually pain is inevitable and mental pain is inevitable. You know, if I was rang up today and just said my partner is dead, I'm going to experience mental pain. Okay. There's no way about it. Yeah. And that's not necessarily going into story or whatever, but then it's like, I can then create the suffering of it shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have happened. You know, this is it. So in a way, one of my things is, it's that often one of the ways we create suffering is it shouldn't be happening. That's how we create suffering. And the reason why we create suffering when we say it shouldn't be happening, because it is happening. If we say it shouldn't be happening, then something is happening. And we've created the suffering when we say it shouldn't be happening. How can we come into relationship with it is actually happening? And how do we work with that rather than saying it shouldn't be happening? And that's really, it's again, you know, to be really aware of who's ready for those teachings, you know, who's really ready. But, you know, in a way, that's what was so great about, they said about the Buddha, that the Buddha was able to give a teaching for anybody to be able to receive it. So it wouldn't be the same teaching, because sometimes we can come out with these quotes from Buddhism and some people will be really quite angry because they're not ready. They haven't done, you know, they're not ready for it. So it's not to say don't give the teaching, but how do we make it accessible. You know, if you think of the Kisa Gotami story, I mean, it's such a beautiful way of teaching. It's like, yeah, you know, the Buddha says, you know, go to a house and bring me a mustard seed from someone who's never known death. You know, what a great teaching, you know. And she goes, and of course everybody has known death and she gets it, you know. So of course, Oh, we're at that 12:30 time. Any reflection? Yeah.
There's a question, still a question in the chat box if you want to address
it. Sure. Okay.
Javier said, I have a question. This week, I have a 5-day training program for a job application. I'm not sure if I'm going to be accepted, but the only thing I know is that I want to give all my best. I'd like to hear your opinions about preparing for something that's not sure, but still gives you enthusiasm. Thank you for your time and teachings.
Just be in, well, there's two things. Anxiety. So there's obviously when we're going for something we want, there is going to be anxiety and there's going to be restlessness. And that's normal. It's okay. And so just pay attention to that and give yourself some kindness and warmth. And just be in the moment. I'm just thinking of there's a particular teaching I can't think of it. Don't imagine, but that thing of just be in the present moment. Yeah, just be in the present moment. You know, don't try to fix anything. Don't imagine, don't think, just, you know, because you have, you know, when we try and imagine and we try and fix something, it just goes. Yeah, I can't think of there's a particular teaching. But just don't imagine. It's the only time I like going into the don'ts. Don't imagine. Don't try to fix anything. Don't try to change anything. Just be there. Okay. I think we have come to the end of our time. Thank you for being in community with me.
Okay, thank you. There was someone with a hand raised, but just left. I don't know if you still have a minute.
I still have a minute.
If I couldn't, okay. So Carol, if you want to, please unmute.
Yeah, I'll be quick because I'm aware of the timing. I'd just like to thank you so much for a beautiful meditation and teaching this evening. And there was so many things that sort of resonated with me. And one being, I was one of those children who was sort of hidden away from death and denied, you know, that, you know, connecting with, engaging with, you know, my grandparents, you know, when they were close to passing away. And I get it was, you know, different times and things like that. And I decided to do it very differently with my children and engage them with the sort of the natural process of living and dying. And I noticed that when I meditate, when the sun rises and the sun sets, I get this huge sense of connection with so many different things, with the universe, with nature, with the universe. And my heart, when I do the loving kindness meditation, it fills me up so much. It fills me up with so much joy that I don't know if there's any, is there anything that sort of can validate that there are any particular times in the day to practice loving meditation where you can maximize its benefits?
Well, it's individual, isn't it? I mean, I'm somebody who loves to practice first thing in the morning, but then there are some people who say they love to practice in the evening. I will say that there is something called sundown that definitely people who have dementia or any Alzheimer's, that the when sun goes down, that can be quite traumatic time for people. So some people are really affected by light. But it's for you, you know, for you, when is the best time for you to practice? Yeah. So it's an individual thing, really. And also it depends if you're working, you know, if you're, you know, I work. So it's like if I was retired, I might have a completely different schedule. Yeah. So really trust in your practice. Yeah. So I just wanted to, coming back to what the person asked about the job and anxiety, I remember it was, I just needed a moment to pause. It's like, oh my God, Tilopas. So I'm going to read Tilopas' words of advice. Don't recall, let go of what has passed. Don't imagine, let go of what may come. Don't think, let go of what is happening now. Don't examine, don't try to figure anything out. Don't control, don't try to make anything happen. Rest, relax, rest, relax right now and rest. The words of Tilopa. Thank you. Okay, happy holidays. Take care of yourself. There's lots of things that can activate us during this time of the year. So take care of yourself and see you sometime next year. Yeah.
Okay, so just two things before we wrap up. There's someone in the chat asking, and I tried to find it, but I couldn't. Could you please repeat the venue where you will be attending the New Year's?
Vancouver Buddhist Center.
Vancouver Buddhist Center. Okay.
I will
put that in the chat in a minute. And just tiny little thing that is on my mind that I would like to share quickly, because I know this is a huge theme. You were speaking about children that are restrained from death. My father passed when I was 12, and I was one of those children who was taken away from the event. And I remember at the last minute, I had to run to see the open casket and seeing the body of the man that was inside of that. I was 12 at the time, and I've never regretted to do it. So just a last note that I wanted to say from my own experience.
Thank you for sharing that.
Okay, so thank you all. Have as wonderful as possible holiday season. Thank you, Villa Massara. We'll be seeing you next year sometime. And you can open up your mics and just greet each other, say your goodbyes, and thank you all for being here.
And thank you, George. Thank you for the poem. It was a lovely poem.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I took a copy. I copied that. You could read that at the end, actually, Jorge.
Yeah, I can read it if you want. I've never read it.
Please.
Let me see if I can see the large version of it. Okay, so this is from John Keane. Beatitude. Love everything. Love the sky and the sea, trees and rivers, mountains and abysses. Love animals, and not just because you are one. Love your parents and your children, even if you have none. Love your spouse or partner, no matter what either word means to you. Love until you create a cavern in your loving, until it seethes like a volcano. Love every time. Love your enemies. Love the enemies of your enemies. Love those whose very idea of love is hate. Love the liars and the fakes. Love the tattletales and the hypocrites, the hucksters and the traitors. Love the thieves, because everyone has thought of stealing something at least once. Love the rich, if only to empty your purse or wallet. Love the poverty of your empty coin purse or wallet. Love your piss and sweat and shit. Love your and others' chatter, and its proof of the expansiveness of nothingness. Love your shadows and their silent censure. Love your fears, yesterdays and tomorrows. Love your yesterdays and tomorrows. Love your beginning and your end. love the fact that your end is another beginning, or could be for someone else. Love yourself, but not too much that you cannot love everything and everyone else. Love everywhere. Love in the absence of love. Love the monsters breeding in every corner of the city and suburb, all throughout the soil of the countryside. Love the monster breeding inside you and slaughter him with love. Love the shipwreck of your body, your mind's salted garden. Love, love. Okay. Thank you.